My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. Amen. No lanes on the track when we unite and stick. This isn't A game. Better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. Amen. No lanes on the track.
Hey, now it's the Mike and JD show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined as always by JD, by God Oliva. How you doing, JD?
Busy, busy, busy. My third podcast in 3 days.
Yeah, all man. So earlier this week on Monday, just out of nowhere, JD hits me up and he's like, hey, I want to do a JD Oliva project. And I'm like, yes, let's go ahead and do that. And then he told me the premise. He said he's going to have a childhood friend on and talk some Batman 89. I'm like, hell yeah, JD. So why don't you tell him about it?
I lied. I did 4 podcasts in 4 days because I forgot about the JD Oliva project. So my best friend from childhood, my buddy Joe Ziegler, never did any podcasting, super charismatic dude. But this is what we do. We just go to movies. We talk about movies. That's always been like our big thing. Like, he introduced me to Big Trouble in Little China, right? Like, I dragged him to Batman Forever when we were kids. This is what we do. We get to, you know, we're in our 40s now. We just get together and we go see movies. So, like, I texted him when I was watching Batman. I did put a thing on my Facebook page the other day about how much the first Batman movie meant to me, Batman 1989. June 23rd, 1989. I'll tweet something about that every year. And I decided I was going to watch it. And I was like, you know, I'm going to podcast about this. I think I texted you and said, I want to do something about this. And then I was talking to my buddy. I'm like, why don't you jump on with me? Why don't you do this show with me? Try this. And he did, and I think we did a great job. And maybe this is a new thing that we do on the show, on the Patreon specifically. Maybe
we'll leave it up to the Mike and JD show universe. If you guys would like, if you guys get a chance, listen to Batman 89. I went ahead and released it for free because I was so impressed with it. I loved it.
Thanks, man.
And honestly, me and JD are not getting along right now because I like his podcast better than ours. Because we were tossing around some ideas for maybe, you know, possibly you and Joe doing this going forward, and then you said, hey, can you do a logo and a thing for it? And I was like, yeah. And then I got all excited because I'm like, you know, I get excited for you, so you let me a part of the process, and I came up with a little something that I want to debut it because I'm really excited about this.
You created these. You named it. You made this. You go ahead and go ahead and showcase your work,
so,
my friend.
Coming soon to the Mike and JD Show Patreon is going to be a new podcast starring JD and his buddy Joe. Don't call me Dolph Ziggler, which he probably has no idea who that is. I'm sure
he does. You know, he's a wrestling fan. He's a very casual wrestling fan, so he's familiar with Dolph Ziggler.
Okay, but here we go. Coming soon to the Mike and JD show, Betamax Memories, a movie review podcast with JD and his childhood best friend, Joe Ziegler. Coming soon, I don't know how, like, if it's going to be like a scheduled thing or how often, but, you know, we're working out the details right now. But it's a passion thing for JD, and I'm like, hell yeah, go for it, man. Let's kick some ass.
I apologize. My hair is driving me nuts tonight. Yeah, dude, it's gonna be a lot of fun. You outdid yourself with the banner. Like, you sent that to me yesterday, I believe. And I was like, holy crap. And I sent it to Joe and he was all about it too. So it's probably gonna be pretty infrequent. Hopefully not as infrequent as the JD Oliva project is. But I don't know. I'll probably keep the project for just doing kind of my personal stuff and talking about things. But yeah, man. So I did Betamax, the pilot for Betamax Memories. I actually did War Live Pal with our old boss, Garrett Gonzalez and Andrew Zarian. That was eye-opening, to say the least.
Yeah.
And then I jumped on probably the number one or number two amateur wrestling podcast there is, The Short Time with Jason Bryant. I couldn't believe the number of live viewers we had. Like, wow. I was stunned with the amount of people he had at Wednesday afternoon at noon. I was shocked the number of people that were watching, but it was pretty cool. And yeah, man, I've been a machine just promoting Gaijin. 2 weeks left on the Kickstarter. 250% funded, man. I want to break, like I said, the goal is to get to 4,000. That's like the lofty stretch goal. Realistically, I just want to beat my record, which would be $3,500. If I could hit $3,500, if I can make $1,000 more in 2 weeks, I would achieve that goal that I have set for myself. And that's to make Gaijin my number one Kickstarter thing. And then I had an interesting talk with Garrett, and he was like, you know, he said something interesting about you shouldn't give up on this world yet. Cause I had originally planned for Gaijin to be a done and one. And he's like, there's so much more. Garrett goes, there's so much more here.
Mm-hmm.
And I had an idea before I went to bed last night. And maybe there's more here. I kind of have to think about it. It's just a little germ of an idea right now, but I don't know. When the book comes out and people start reading it, I want to hear some opinions from people, because I'm starting to kick around the idea of maybe doing more.
Yeah, well, you are doing more. You could tell JD's not in school this summer because he's cranking out all kinds of stuff, man. Killing the Town Chapter 2 was released on Patreon. So everybody go check that out. And if you've had an opportunity to read that, please give us some feedback. Let us know what you think. But man, so you hit me up today and you were like, Mike, I really want to talk about AEW Creative. I want to go on a rant about AEW Creative. And then I was like, well, what is the title of the show going to be? Because I didn't even know. Because I'll be honest, I was going to watch Dynamite last night, but bro had to go back to work last night. I worked a full shift, came home, and during dinner, I got called back into work to deal with something that's not even like crazy important. But here's the thing that you guys need to know when you have like a real job. If your boss is pissed, you got to make sure that he is no longer pissed. And if it means cutting into your dinner and running back to work to take care of something, even if you don't think it's all that important, you still go do it because you got to make the boss happy, right? So that's what I was doing last night. So anyway, I didn't even get a chance to watch Dynamite last night, so I don't have an opinion on Dynamite or what the creative is heading into Forbidden Door. But man, what's on your mind? Because you really wanted to talk about this.
So I did the show yesterday or 2 days ago with Garrett and Andrew. And, Garrett, you know, he knows to avoid WWE with me because I really don't watch too much of it. We did talk about the Wyatt 6-6. Am I supposed to call him the Wyatt 6-6 or the Wyatt 6? I don't understand how it's written.
I'll be honest, I don't know. So when I did the YouTube video, I copied what Rich did for Voices of Wrestling. Smart. He put sick and then the number 6. I don't know what that means. It's like it's like calling them corn but having a backwards R to me. I don't know.
Or like the movie 7 where the V was a 7, the number 7.
Yeah, so I think it's just 6.
Well, the 7 looks like a V, but a 6 doesn't look like an S. Whatever. That doesn't matter. Anyway, so we talked about he was like, where are you at with AEW? So I'm gonna lecture. So I said that, you know, I'll be honest, I'm not thrilled with the product and haven't been for a while. And it's not like I hate it. It's not like I seriously despise it. Like, I have not hit the Taylor Wilde quotient, as I'll refer to it for the rest of time. Like, I'm not going to break on the podcast like I did in Brace for Impact about 2 years ago. But I'd be honest. I said I play with my phone a lot during the show. I have a hard time staying focused during Dynamite episodes. And if it weren't for the Mike and JD show, I don't know if I would. I don't know how active I'd be. Like, I never watched Collision. I haven't watched Rampage in years. Like, my real life is kind of more important at the moment, but I don't miss Dynamite usually, you know. But I'm not happy as a fan, and I'm not mad, but I'm also not happy. And One thing I took stock of myself this year is when I wasn't happy with where I was around the time my dad died, before my dad died, I started like talking through things and journaling, and it's made me a stronger, better person. So I want to do that with this right now. And I mentioned that on the show, I talked about how Tony, you know, we used to joke about Mid-South Tony, and he would say how much he liked the old Mid-South show, blah, blah, blah. And Andrew's brought up a good point. There are people in that room, apparently, who are saying things like, yeah, you might have liked Mid-South, but where are they now? Mm. They went out of business. You don't want to go out of business. You want to do things like WWE. And I heard that, and I pushed back. If you haven't watched We're Live, pal, I'll kind of give you a little thing. I said, yeah, here's why that's bullshit. In 85, Mid-South was the number one wrestling TV show. TV show in cable. Now, did they do the business WWF did? No. You know why? Because WWF had Hulk Hogan. And I've said this on this show, and I'll say it again. Mike, who was Hulk Hogan's big rival in 1984 when they burst onto the scene, when everything was coming up WWF and they were starting that national expansion? Who was that big storyline enemy he had?
Exactly.
Nobody.
Yeah. So he beats the Sheik, right? He beats the Sheik. And then after that, it's just heel of the month.
Correct. And they never, he does. Hulk Hogan does not have a proper storyline feud until Roddy Piper in 85. He never even gets like in danger or hurt or like, you know, the classic baby face has to overcome until Bundy in 86. He doesn't have a true like money drawing feud aside from the Piper thing until Andre in 87. And boy, they milked that for everything.
Hold on. Paul Orndorff in 86.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. You're right. 86. Yeah. I take that back.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So in 84, I think they were trying something with Jesse Ventura, but then Jesse just couldn't wrestle anymore. I think they were trying. I had some old tapes of them starting something, but it just never happened because they had the MTV thing and they were going to, the wrestling classic happened. So they were really trying to push for that, I think, but they never got to Jesse.
Realistically, it's probably just a feud of the month to sell house show tickets around the loop, which is all they did. That's what the business was. Now, you and I have raved about Mid-South 84, 85. We talked about it on our show. We've gone above and beyond. I've written about it. It was the better show, right? Now, the economics of life ended Mid-South Wrestling, right? It had nothing to do with the fact that WWF was the better program. It wasn't. Because watch those shows. You tell me which of those shows is more watchable today. But we got some Northeast dickweeds in that writer's room right now. We got some, you know, strapping young bucks who think that they know what they're talking about, who sit there and will tell Tony things like, this is what wrestling is today. So what's happened, man? Forbidden Door, Joe, our boss, Joe Lanza, had a great episode of his show today talking about how his theorizing that Tony and AEW have actually run off the hardcore wrestling fans, not the hardcore AEW fans, not the people that Mike likes to poke and prod with his tweets every week, which, by the way, I love and appreciate, because those people
it's been a banner week for that, by the way.
Oh, it sure has, man. I just love your Twitter so much. You do things that I can't do. So as I was saying, you've got these voices like, Joe Lanza, our boss, thinks that the hardcore wrestling fan is being run off. Forbidden Door will do well this weekend. It'll probably hit $1 million gate. They might hit 10,000 in attendance.
Yeah.
Mike, 2 years ago, I took Andy to Forbidden Door at the United Center, the first Forbidden Door, and there were 16,000 people in the building. Right. And I had to make sure to get my seats immediately because it was a first day sellout. That isn't happening for AEW anymore. Right. In there, and I've been saying this on our show for years about what is our Mike and JD show catchphrase, Mike? What do we do with
casuals?
Fuck the casuals. Right.
Yep.
That was what I said for years. I said, you want to establish your base and stay loyal to your base, because once you push away the hardcores, then you lose your identity. Here we are 2.5 years later, right? Look where we are. you listened to Wade Keller. And I'll pick on Wade Keller because Wade Keller used to cry and moan all the time. He's like, why does everybody have to be in a faction? Why does it have to be like this? Sean Ross Sapp crying gang wars every time they had a podcast and there was like faction feuding, right? So you listen to these fucking people and you brought in Jimmy Jacobs. You brought in Pepperman. You brought in Pat Buck. You brought in all these WWE guys. You brought in all these Vince disciples. Now you brought in the Pepperman. Like, you brought all these people in who, by the way, were Vince acolytes during a phase when WWE business had gotten so soft that it allowed for competition to exist in the marketplace. First time in 20 years. But what happens? You surround yourself with people that know the business and you listen to, quite frankly, idiots with podcasts. But you listen to more famous idiots with podcasts.
Yeah.
Right. You listen to guys who have a name like Wade Keller and you allow them to strip mine everything that made your company different. Now, what do we have? Now we have soft WWE. Again, Joe said it best. Joe said his great quote was like, they're better at doing the sports entertainment thing than you are. So why do you do that thing? Like, I understand you're going to give us Forbidden Door. It's going to be a great show. You have better wrestling. Sure. But your TV every week doesn't make sense. Like, what the hell was that? Like, there was a match between Orange Cat or between Zack Sabre Jr. and Kyle O'Reilly. I was really looking forward to. And the storytelling was so like muddled. The match is good, but you keep showing Gabe Kidd and Roderick Strong, which I didn't even realize that until Joe pointed out to me. What bothered me was that ending angle where Ishii comes out and nobody cheers him because you've chased away all those fans. No one cared about Naito. No one cared about Ishii. No one cared about Minoru Suzuki, right? Where are those fans? Where is that hardcore fan? Not hardcore AEW, but hardcore wrestling fan base. The quote-unquote sickos that you book for. Like, this is the problem. This is like, again, what we said on this show 2 years ago was you have to stay true to what you are. You have to embrace your role in this. Stop chasing. Mike, how many fucking casuals have been won?
None. Because, like, the numbers, and I'm not just talking about the ratings. I know last week rating was, like, an abomination. It obviously bounced back to what their new normal is, which is kind of hovering around 700,000. But we don't really, like, I don't really pay too much attention to the ratings anymore because, you know, it can fluctuate really easily. And honestly, like Dave was talking about it this morning, you know, the top tier stations are down to like 70 million homes now. And so a year over year rating, it's going to be decreasing every single year. We're going to get to a point where streaming overtakes cable. I think we're almost getting to that point here eventually. But
Let's take ratings out. Let's look at the ticket buyers. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I was trying to get at. And here is a stat. I was actually going to save this for the Who Killed WCW show. And I will still talk about this, but Garrett Kidney said this. And look, AEW is about a million times better than what WCW was in like the last few years of WCW. So don't think that I'm comparing the quality of that. But I do think there are some comparisons about the downturn in their business. So this is from Garrett Kidney. He pulled up Starrcade 97, 17,500 fans. JD, 2 years ago for Forbidden Door, how many people were in the United Center?
16,000.
16,000. Okay. So then Starrcade 98, 16,000 fans. So you're down like 1,500 fans. Starrcade 99, 8,500 fans. Starrcade 2000, 6,500 fans. So that's like a year over year over year decrease. So you talk about the ratings. Okay, the ratings are naturally going to go down. I think last week was wild. It was an anomaly. It was crazy. They do have to look into it. They have to understand it. But their year over year downturn in attendance for these bigger shows, I think is something that they have to look into. Right now, the product is cold. And that doesn't mean that the product is bad. Like, last week's Dynamite, I enjoyed. Now I can't argue about last night's Dynamite because I had to work. I didn't get a chance to watch it, but last week's Dynamite was really good, but the interest is waning every single week and every single year.
Mike, I'm about to light the chat up. Who is this? Is this Cousin Joe?
I don't know.
Okay. TGV. I get what JD is saying, but it's, oh, I love capital letters. Huge, but TK is chasing TV money. And sadly, you have to go when the modern crap goes. Fact. Where's the fact? Show me the fact. I'm showing you TV ratings that are lower. I'm showing you attendance numbers that are lower. I'm showing you merch numbers that are lower. Everything is down in 2 years. But you're going to throw fact at me? Where's the fact? Show me. You're saying fact, fact, fact. You have zero empirical evidence to back up a thing that you're saying, but you're going to throw fact at me. Show me a fact. Show me one fact. Show me how this chasing TV dollars, quote unquote, is helping their product. I'll wait.
Yeah, they're probably gonna get some, they're gonna get a new TV deal. That is absolutely happening.
Show me where chasing WWE, we're trying to create your own bloodline, has helped them.
Yeah.
It hasn't. Metric is up. Not one metric is up this year.
Including
oh my god.
Yeah. No metrics are up. But here's the metric that's most important to AEW that is down, and it's attendance. It really is attendance.
I would love to. Okay.
Yeah, he said.
I'm on your side. No, you're not.
Yeah, he might be catching strikes.
Where is the evidence that what he's doing isn't going to increase anything? Anything?
Yeah.
One thing. Show me one way it's been effective. You think it helps their TV deal having to tarp off arenas? I used to go to AEW shows where people sat in the whole arena.
Yeah.
I used to go to AEW shows where if I wasn't on my phone immediately when tickets went online, you couldn't buy a seat. I missed All In 2019 in Chicago because I couldn't get in quick enough. Because people would fly from all over the country because there was more interest in the product. Take your chasing TV dollars thing because you sound like one of them. You sound like one of them. You sound like the people in that room that are telling Tony, this is how we have to do it. This is how we have to make our show better, when all you do is make the show less watchable and have less people watching it and have less people spending money for it. Let's see how Forbidden Door this year draws on pay-per-view as compared to the last two. I bet you it's down. I bet you it's
here,
down.
And I tried to make this point in one of the discords today in Voices of Wrestling, but unfortunately I didn't stick around to see if anybody responded. But you know, when AEW started, they were like Rage Against the WWE machine, right? They were a movement. Everybody wanted to be a part of this new thing. They wanted to be a part of a movement because WWE, me included, had turned all of us away. Look at this cup I'm drinking out of. This is totally like, I did not like plan this. But look at this cup I'm drinking out of. This is my WrestleMania cup from WrestleMania in Santa Clara like 10 years ago. Okay. Yeah, it was really good. So needless to say, like 2017, they kind of turned me off. And then so when AEW came around, I was super into them. There was my favorite wrestling TV show. I loved watching the show every single week. I still like the show, but it's not as exciting anymore. And it's not a movement. And honestly, it's getting to the point where it's a bit uncool. Somehow, some way, WWE made themselves cool. I think The Rock helped out with that. I think Cody Rhodes is a bit of a dork, but somehow he has ingrained himself to become somebody cool that you want to follow, in spite of the fact that he's got that god awful neck tattoo. But he is cool. The Bloodline became cool. WWE became the cool product, and AEW is now just they're uncool. And that's a big part of it. I think it's not the cool thing to do when AEW comes to your town anymore. It's just like, I'll go to it if I have time, but if I don't have time, I'm not really going to bother with it.
Mike, everyone that worked there when the product was uncool is now working for Tony.
Yes. Yep.
Like, how are we listening to these people? Again, you're telling me, oh, they're going to get a big deal because of this. How?
They're not going to get it. They're going to get a big deal in spite of the downturn in the business. Because you know what? Because they were, even last week when there were 502,000 viewers, they were still number three in their time slot. Like, you know what I mean? It's just like the nature of cable. I did kind of have some fun with those ratings last week, but I also figured it would probably bounce back in a decent way. Hey,
we have to have fun. We have to chase engagement. That's what we do.
Yeah, well, but when I do it, it's more just like making myself laugh. And so, dude, I think my joke last week about the AEW ratings being the fault of the fans, me doing that heel promo
that was
on
awesome.
Twitter, I'm pretty sure Dax blocked me because of that. Because I don't tweet that man whatsoever. I don't think I've ever tweeted him. And if I did, it would have been a compliment because they happen to be my favorite tag team. But yeah, I think he blocked me because he saw it because I got so much engagement. Like literally like hundreds and hundreds of retweets.
Mike, this is not a humble brag thing, but I know because we're on the Voices of Wrestling Network that people do listen to our show. So I know our opinions, they don't think they carry any weight, but I know people do listen. So, you know, it's kind of one reason I'm hoping somebody there listens to some reason and starts going back to what makes this company different. They're doing a weigh-in for the main event for Forbidden Door, which I kind of like because at least like when Cody did it was really bad. So I'd recommend using a digital scale and not an old school scale.
That Cody weigh-in could not have been worse. The scale was not even calibrated, and it's because the suspension on the ring. It's like Cody is like he wrestled in high school at a very high level, and he did not know that it would not be a good idea to put that in the ring.
Georgia in the early 2000s.
I'm
from Illinois. I take my shots. I've been to 1,000 weigh-ins in my life, man. Thousands upon thousands of weigh-ins, and that was the worst weigh-in I've ever seen. So it could be done well. But what's not done well is you're doing, you know, can they coexist angles? You're doing, you know, rapid fire cuts. You're doing people standing at stupid angles. I didn't hate the intro segment. I thought it was pretty solid, actually. I like them elevating Daniel Garcia. I like Will and MJF trying to one-up each other. You know, I think it adds to the MJF character of, you know, he's remarkably insecure. I think that's the best MJF is when he's insecure and not feeling, you know, like the best guy in the world. So I think that's good for the product. I just want him to be different, man. I just want him to be different. Like, you aren't cool anymore because you're listening. You have Jimmy Jacobs in there, who's not a cool person at all. I said it. I'll take some shit. I don't give a crap. Like, you got people in there who don't do cool work, who have never done cool work. That's the truth.
Well, and they just brought in Artie Evans, which I don't think you and I even had the opportunity to talk about. You know, so JD, do you know what storyline Artie Evans was actively working in TNA whenever he left?
No.
He was the head writer for Ash by Elegance, which has died in TNA. It's really bad. And one of the reasons why he left is because they thought that it was really bad and they were trying to get him to change it. And he didn't, and he liked it. He liked what he was doing with the Ash by Elegance, and it's so bad. And that's who Tony Khan just hired. And so look, we're not sitting here just trying to shit all over AEW.
No, I want it to that be is better. Not,
like, we actually really like it. I'm pretty excited for Forbidden Door.
It's good.
We're going to do a little bit of a Forbidden Door preview here pretty soon after we talk some other stuff. But we're just like, look, we know for a fact that people in that company have listened to this show. We've heard that they have heard us before, so they do know who we are. I want you guys to hear what I got to say. Stop chasing WWE and just do your own thing. Be yourselves and just put out good television. And eventually things will start to bounce back. It's going to go down for a little bit because you got to build some new stars and you can't continue to rehash these WWE fireds and these old guys and putting them up at the top. You got to build some new, exciting and young stars. NXT freaking sucks. It is the worst pro wrestling television show. It is worse than MLW as far as like quality wrestling television. And I don't have any qualms with saying that because I have done some MLW podcasts. MLW is absolutely a better product than NXT. But here's what NXT has an edge, and they have an edge on AEW right now. And they're actually, you know, super competitive in the ratings. I think last week NXT won. I think, I don't know where they were at this week, but here's the thing. They have young, hip, and cool people on that show. And they're constantly cranking out new stars for young people to get behind. And AEW needs to get more of that. They need some new energy into this company that is not just chasing what WWE is.
I agree with you. I think that's why they had those three guys in the opening segment they had.
Yeah.
Right. I think having Swerve and Ospreay is a good move for the main event of this program. I think that's all well and good. Here's what's important in pro wrestling thing people forget about.
Go ahead. I'm going to light up King of the North in a sec.
Oh, I like that. Perception in pro wrestling is more important than anything. Like I talked about Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan was perceived the biggest star in wrestling. So people bought into it. WWE is perceived to be the coolest company in the world. You know what else when WWE was perceived to be the coolest company in the world? The Attitude Era.
Yeah.
Go back and watch Attitude Era Raw. It's awful. It's unwatchable.
Stinks.
just horrible. Yeah. Anytime that Steve Austin is not on screen, and believe me, they put him on screen as often as possible, is unwatchable. It's unwatchable until The Rock gets good. And then you have two segments that are watchable. The rest of it is ass, but people bought into it. People watch it. Because perception is the most important thing in wrestling. And WWE gets that. And they've created the idea that their product is cool and your product is not. Now, part of it is because they have that LaGentil Army and Nick Khan planting the right stuff.
But yes. At the
same time, Tony acts like they're not cool.
Yeah. And when was WCW the number one company? When they were cool, when NWO hit, and they were cool. Now King of the North, he's back put on a little bit, this dude.
Oh, what'd the King say?
Goes, noted young and cool guy Sean Spears. Okay, that's an exception. Come on. You know that's an exception. He said that he just wanted to make a Sean Spears joke. And
I will accept a Sean Spears joke. Like, it makes me laugh. And WWE fans are like, can you believe they couldn't do anything with Sean Spears? I'm like, you guys had him for 10 years. The only thing you ever figured out him is to count to 10.
But guess what? Wrestling fans like to do the most, specifically count. American fans. They love counting.
They love to count.
Counting to 10 is like literally one of their favorite things. That's why that stupid dumbass song Bodies Hit the Floor was so popular. Counting. What? American wrestling fans loved it. It was the ECW theme for the new ECW. Like, that's just true. American fans just love counting. It's the weirdest thing. And, like Sesame Street. Yeah. But hey, we'll put a bow on this AEW topic. We are going to catch up with some Forbidden Door talk. But I want to get to the chat. There's been chat is busy tonight.
So what happens when you poke the bear?
Yeah, King of the North says also here to check on Mike after they announced Jordynne Grace versus Dana Brooke. Her name in this podcast now is Trash by Elegance. That's what we're calling her now. So yeah,
you know what's the weirdest part about Dana Brooke? She is a different face.
Yeah. She looks completely different than the one I saw her in WWE.
Yeah.
Like, somebody had to explain to me who that was when she debuted in TNA. I was like, oh, I didn't know that was the same person.
It's like when Jennifer Grey from Dirty Dancing got the nose job, and she just looked like a completely different human being. Like,
yeah. I'm still a beautiful woman, but I'm just like, unrecognizable, man.
Yeah. She just looks completely different. JD is going to rant about bad creative. Oh, King of the North. JD is going to rant about bad creative. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to no sell it because we're getting a Mystico Lucha Brothers team up with Yoda Tsuji on their side. But yeah, I agree with that. That's
Cool. I mean, look, there's one thing that AEW is doing better than any promotion out there. It's just putting together really good and fun and exciting matches. Now, they do have diminishing returns at times because there is such a thing as having too much of a good thing. But I can't get enough really good matches, but I do not get as excited about them as I used to. Io says, your boy Meltzer and Alvarez screwed up the Pat McAfee Raw, so it was due to the family issue. You know what? If you watched that television show and if you watched Pat McAfee show earlier in the day, they were shooting an angle with the Wyatt Six crew. So when Pat didn't show up and then Miz shows up on commentary, and they kind of played it up like it was a little bit of an angle. They didn't want to like put Pat's business out there. So I think it was a safe assumption that it was an angle. And then we found out it wasn't. And then so they said best wishes to Pat. Yeah, it wasn't an angle. His father-in-law died. That's why he missed Raw. That is not an evil mistake. They did not go out there and lie to anybody. They got it wrong. But what they didn't do anything immoral or anything like that. So anybody, specifically Mike Johnson out there, who's trying to call for Meltzer, saying Meltzer embarrassed himself and all this, you can go fuck yourself. That was an honest thing. It was not a big deal. And I doubt Pat McAfee's even mad about it. It's a bunch of people that are trying to jump on Dave for no reason at all. And look, I've been on Brace for Impact, and I've been – yeah, it's the grifters. It's the Bischoff people. It's the – Bruce Pritchard people say, oh, he was wrong. Let's just burn him at the stake. No, that's not what this was. And I've been tough on Dave on Brace for Impact because he has blatantly got some stuff wrong about TNA because he's not completely checking his sources. And I've been tough on him for that. But this one specifically, I think that he doesn't, you guys can just leave that one alone. That's not a big deal whatsoever. It is just something that people are trying to make a big deal for engagement purposes. Let's see. Mr. Majestic says, a way Tony Khan can stop letting the influence of WWE on AEW is to create homegrown talent and an AEW partnership with MLW. I don't know about MLW, but Progress Wrestling, Defy Wrestling, and Border State. Well, a lot of their talent work all those shows, with exception of MLW. Their people are out there. I would, you know, if it would be, I don't know what kind of, they have a Ring of Honor as kind of their farm system right now. So it's just kind of hard to break through at this point.
So, like, okay, I'll be honest with you. Like, look at all their champions right now. Okay, world champion is Swerve Strickland, a guy who realistically had a cup of coffee in NXT, didn't do anything in the main scene. Like, you have Kazuchika Okada, that's not a WWE guy. You've got Will Ospreay. Look at the Young Bucks. There's so many. Yeah. I was gonna go through the champions, but there's just too damn many of them.
There's no way. I mean, I guess the only WWE person that holds a title right now that I can think of is Mercedes, and that's a secondary championship.
Tony Storm, again, she had she had a whipped cream pie, I guess, in the main event. Like, Tony Storm is far more known for AEW at this point than she is WWE. Like, I don't think the talent is the problem. Yeah, they got a lot of former WWE guys, but I mean, like, none of them are being, I mean, like, I don't consider Swerve, he got fired a week into his main event run. Like,
yeah.
And his main event, his main roster run. Like, right. I think they're pushing the right guys. The problem is the people in the back, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think the American Dragon is innocent of this stuff either, to be quite honest with you.
I remember listening to a Danielson interview back when he was with WWE, and he said something that was so asinine. I was like, he must just be being nice. But I can't remember who he told. It might have been Jericho. It might have been one of the Jericho pods. But he was like, he's saying that his favorite wrestler was Heath Slater. He's like, Heath does everything great. I just love, he's so entertaining. He's so great at everything. He gets the crowd roll. Like, I just love everything that guy's doing. It might have just been him being nice, but I don't know, man. I don't know. Danielson doesn't do the Heath Slater stuff, but I don't know. I'm starting to question his judgment a little bit. We'll see.
He heard he was the guy that brought in Jimmy Jacobs.
Yeah. Sage says, I feel like the evidence shows the opposite. People are way less interested after the Brochachos. I mean, that was like the first crack, I would say.
Here's the thing though. It's like WCW. When things start getting bad, people start falling off, and attendance started falling during the Brochachos, right? Yeah. And then it ended, and they followed up with the C2, and that did pretty good. And then since then, you had Sting, the Sting thing did good, but everything else beneath that wasn't doing good. What's not working is the Young Bucks cosplaying 1998 WWE and 2000 WCW. The who will control the company? No one cares about that stuff anymore.
No, it's stupid. No. Yeah, Forbidden Door. This is from VR. Forbidden Door sell out every single match or talent was announced. They're crawling to 10,000 and might not even hit that. I mean, they'll probably get there. Probably, but yeah, look, it's a far cry from what they used to do. And then I wanted to get to this. He said WWE is still uncool in the grand public conscience. Well, I'm talking about among wrestling fans, dude. He goes, let's not sucking them off. Well, I know that I'm drinking out of a WWE cup, which is a complete coincidence, but I wouldn't say that we're sucking them off. I'm about to tear into them in a minute.
I teach high school kids, man. And like, they used to tease me a lot because I liked AEW. Because they were all like doing like the acknowledge me thing in class and stuff like that. Like, teenagers are far more into WWE than they ever were AEW. So, I mean, like, that's just the reality of it. And again, perception is reality. Like, the WWE marketing arm shapes that. Like, believe me, I don't want to suck off WWE. It's the last thing I want
to
do.
No, we just try to spit facts. TGV says, by the way, I'm not American, I'm Australian. Hey, after tonight's debate, you might want to thank your lucky stars. So for me, it's not like I can make a difference. If anything, I pay to watch AEW, so there's no metric right here that I can still continue to pay. I didn't know that Australians had to pay for AEW. I guess probably on Triller. They probably have to on Triller.
Well, I was going to pick on the continent of Australia and have a bit out of it, but I won't do that.
Yeah. Okay. Man, we got a lot of people here on the chat. I can't get to everybody right now. One thing I want to get to, and I want to get the chat's opinion on this.
If you want us to get to you, a super chat would make sure that we said your comments.
Yeah. So, earlier this week on Raw, I did not watch all of Raw, but I did see the clips of this cause I wanted to talk about it. There was a segment between Dominic Mysterio and Liv Morgan, and where Liv Morgan is kind of playing like this obsessive female type and kind of like trying to seduce Dominic to get her way with him. And at one point she's sending him lewd pictures on his phone. So then Dominic then goes into the back and it starts showing people the pictures of her on his phone. JD, what does that remind you of?
Well, that sounds exactly like the Vince McMahon lawsuit. I don't know what's more unbelievable. The fact that Triple H is this stupid, which I actually do believe he's that stupid.
Yeah.
Or that women would be interested in Dominic Mysterio. That's a tall mountain to climb for me.
Yeah. You know what? Like, I don't know. They're absolutely spoofing Janelle Grant, right?
Yeah, 100%. Like, is this really a smart thing to do when you're in court, when you have the Department of Justice looking into you? Well, I guess I'm looking at them because Vince is gone now. Maybe they think they're making fun of Vince, but it really sure comes up like they're making fun of the whole situation. It's gross and crass and classless.
Honestly, Dominic is playing Vince. Like, I think they're trying to make it seem like in this weird way. And if you guys think I'm crazy, because I do think, like, I saw some WWE, like, diehard defenders say, oh, they would never do that. It's a complete coincidence. I'm like, okay, if it's a complete coincidence, let's say, for instance, a complete coincidence. How stupid can you be? How stupid can you be? And I look, Nick Khan, smart guy, right? TKO Endeavor, really smart people. Lee Fitting, the director of television, come over from ESPN Monday Night Football. I guarantee you he's a brilliant, bright guy. Triple H comes from that wrestling carny background to where you use your television show to get vengeance on your enemies. And this is right out of the Vince playbook. They did it for years. They would weave the real life into their storylines, especially when they felt like they were being attacked, and they would put themselves as sympathetic figures and make fools out of the ones that were coming after them. Anytime the federal government was coming after Vince, he would go on TV and kind of make fun of them for it. Or he would create a storyline revolving around it because life is imitating art. That's exactly what I think this is. I can't prove it, and they'll never admit it, but it's pretty fucking similar. And they're making Dominic be the sympathetic figure, which is what they're trying to make Vince to be, which is right out of the Vince playbook.
Okay, now I'm not watching, so I gotta ask questions. How is Dominic a sympathetic figure? Isn't Dominic like the least sympathetic figure in WWE?
No.
Like, it feels like they're making fun of Vince by making Dominic good. Or am I just wrong because I'm not watching?
He's being used by this woman, this crazy woman. You know what I mean? Because he was supposed to, in storyline, he's like with mommy, Rhea Ripley. Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan were enemies, right? Rhea Ripley's injured right now. So now Liv is trying to overtake Dominic and manipulate him to turn against the Judgment Day. I believe that's what's going with it. And so now she's being like crazy manipulative, sending lewd pictures, and now he's like showing his friends.
Why is this not a bigger thing? Remember when MJF and Juice Robinson did the quarters thing and people lost their collective mind about that?
But I mean, disgusting too. But we know, JD, we know the answer to the question.
We already know
the answer to the question. Because LaGentle has told him not to be upset about it. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, you're right.
Like, I mean, honestly, if something like this played out on AEW, Raj Giri, all over it.
Mm-hmm. You're right. But it's perfectly fine because WWE is the coolest show.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they have the media manipulated here and to where they won't really go after them for this stuff. Baby Huey says Liv is trying to get revenge on Rhea. So she's using Dominic to get revenge on Rhea. That's the storyline. And you know, whatever that storyline, that's fine. The lewd pictures and him showing his friends overstepping because of the current situation that they're in. It makes no sense to do that. They have to either be really stupid or they are intentionally doing this to make light of the situation.
I truly believe Paul Levesque is stupid, but I don't think he's that stupid.
Yeah.
I do think he's that spiteful and that vengeful because we've seen that stuff over the years play out with him specifically. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's wild. And now we got MVP, and I don't think this is getting enough coverage. Some sites have covered it, but MVP, he's essentially going the Kevin Kelly route almost, and I think he's trying to tweet himself out of a job because he's pretty upset. Hold on. Here we go. Actually, King of the North is saying it right here. He's saying it for me. It says MVP accused Triple H of holding black talent down on Instagram and nobody covered it. I think it got a little bit, but like not even – it's not getting that much because I think – yeah, well, because it's basically an Instagram comments. So he's kind of like replying to people and doing emojis and like giving 100s as people are saying this stuff. He's like agreeing with them. So he's not outwardly saying it, but he's saying it.
Instagram doesn't get quite the scrutiny for like news stuff that Twitter gets to.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a different. Yeah, I can kind of see that's still surprising, though. does that hold water?
I mean, if MVP's saying it, I don't see him be a dishonest person. And that's at least one man's perception. Now I don't know, like he, because MVP wanted the Hurt Business to come back, and he's saying the Hurt Business, which is MVP, Bobby Lashley, and I believe Cedric Alexander and Shelton Benjamin, who's not even in the company anymore.
Aren't the Street Profits? And, okay, no, okay.
Who?
Aren't the Street Profits in the Hurt Business too?
No, I think no.
Okay, my bad.
No. I think at one point Bobby Lashley was aligned with him, but that was like a short-lived thing. So, and people are saying we need the Hurt Business back, and MVP is saying that this is like a Triple H call, and the reason it's a racial thing to not have them back at this point. I think it's worth exploring.
I agree.
Now, it's really difficult to say that the entire company is this way. I mean, they're pushing several black stars, and several stars are right at the top of the company. But
TGV has a good comment. I buried him earlier, so I gotta give him some love.
Okay, hold on. So he's turning babyface.
He's babyface turning. I mean, I now love him.
Yeah. So he wore blackface in 1998, whenever the Degeneration X spoofed the Nation of Domination. X-Pac was dressed as Mark Henry, and Road Dogg, the first time Road Dogg did blackface was when he was pretending to be D'Lo Brown. He then him and Billy Gunn then redid that in TNA. No, actually it was Billy Gunn that did it in TNA, and he was dressed as D-Von. He went all the way.
Not good.
That, you know what, that didn't get really, like, nobody cared at the time, because the show was just so outrageous. It was like,
it was also
one
TNA
of many offensive things they were doing, you know.
Yes, but it's also TNA. Like, you can get away with stuff in TNA because, like, I hate to be this guy on this show, but not a lot of people watch.
Yeah, and then of course the Booker T storyline at TGV, the Booker T storyline. Look, I mean, look, there is a shred of this, and even if he doesn't treat people like that, you never know, man. I'm not gonna outwardly say that that's what this is, but I think there's a little bit there that if somebody did some digging, they could probably get some people to speak on the record about some of their experiences. Cause I think, look, and if it was even remotely true, it would get coverage everywhere. Cause you remember what happened with Swole, when Swole talked about it with Tony Khan, then all of a sudden it was everywhere. Now Tony Khan, idiot, decided to say what he said, say, no, she was just a crappy wrestler. Probably didn't need to go there. Just say, look, it's not true.
I mean,
she hadn't done anything since then, but. Right. Yeah. You don't have to kick somebody when they're down. You know what I mean?
Right. But, I mean, that was not a good move on his part. But yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't think one couldn't ask that question.
Yeah.
Based on history.
Yeah, I think it definitely warrants exploration. A couple more topics. I wanted to get your thoughts on this. Donovan Dijak just hit free agency today. He wrote a letter saying that WWE did not even negotiate with him, which I think that if you are trying to sell yourself as a hot commodity, maybe don't say that your previous employer did not even reach out to you to get a contract. I think your price just went down, but that's just me. If I were his agent, I'd probably tell him that I don't do that. But yeah, he is a complete and total free agent. He is free to go anywhere he wants. What do you think of Donovan Dijak's future?
I've always been a fan of his work, like him and Keith Lee in the mid teens, right?
Yeah.
We're doing some really cool stuff on the indies and in Ring of Honor. And I like Dijak, and like, it's weird that he never really got a chance there, being as talented and as big as he is. It's not like T-Bar couldn't, or like, he was T-Bar, I think. Like, what am I thinking of? Mace couldn't work, right? Not a very good worker. Seems like a fun guy, not a very good worker. You know, there's a lot of guys there that get a lot of shots but aren't very good. He is good, right? He has good matches. It's never quite... It's weird. It's weird that he's never really had... He's way better than Karrion Kross, who Triple H just loves.
Just really... For some reason. Really, really, really likes that guy. And I have...
Yeah.
I have no idea. Donovan Dijak, he seems like he has everything. I just don't, he just doesn't have it. There's just
neither
something like
Karrion Kross.
No, Karrion Kross, neither. But He is, you know, a million times better than Karrion Kross, of course.
Yeah.
But specifically Dijak, he just doesn't have it. You know what I mean? Like, he can do the moves, he can do the matches. He's a big guy. You know, probably not like a awful god awful promo, not great, you know what I mean? But there's just something missing from his game, and I honestly don't know what it is. Sometimes people just don't have it.
I mean, I don't disagree with you, but there's plenty of people in that company that don't have it. They just signed Tangaloa, for God's sakes.
Well, like, they signed him for a specific storyline. Well,
I get that, but I get that. That's what I'm saying. It's like you can't find a role in like eight. He's been there for like 7-8 years for guy. That's what's weird.
Where do you see him ending up?
I hope he goes to TNA because I think he could actually do something there. Right, if he goes to AEW, there's just too many guys. You get lost in the shuffle, and he's really good. He'll have really good matches, but then what? You know, there's just not enough room in AEW right now. Like I really think TNA could be a good, or New Japan. Like, he's still young enough where he could do something in New Japan if that's what he wanted to do. I think that would be really cool. I would like to see him in either of those places rather than back in WWE. Although maybe TNA won't sign him because, like, he spoke ill of their sugar daddy.
Who did he speak ill of?
WWE.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? I don't think there's any heat there. He just said that they didn't. There might be now. I don't think that TNA would shy away from Dijak. In fact, Dijak, when he tweeted out his picture, he not only tagged TNA, he tagged Tommy Dreamer, and Tommy Dreamer's bringing him on Busted Open next week. And,
He's being
and
smart.
Then TNA just so happens to be in Philadelphia this weekend, and tomorrow is when he hits free agency. Would not shock me to see him go to TNA. A lot of people like Tommy Dreamer; they like to work for him, so that wouldn't shock me. But I don't think he's going to sign with TNA. A lot of guys from WWE and from AEW, they just like to. Like, hey, you know what? I'm just gonna go get some stuff figured out. I'm gonna work out a character, work out some promos. I'll go work some stuff out in TNA, and then I'll hit the indies, and then maybe I'll go overseas for a little bit, and hopefully they'll take me back. You know what I mean? I see him being one of those guys.
The Mustafa Ali, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could absolutely see that. I think that probably is his best bet. I just don't think there's room for him in AEW right now. He's really good, but I think that he would just get lost in the shuffle. And you made a joke that you just do I called it the Malachi Black, where you just have a bunch of good matches at first and then you used to do jobs.
Yeah. I was thinking of Miro when I said that, but I think it's debatable that Miro had really good matches for a while. He did have a few, but
he had a couple, but he hasn't done anything in years. At least Black's on the TV show.
Yeah. But I, so honestly though, if he, and that I was joking, but I think if he did go to AEW, it would be a pretty similar situation to what he's facing right now.
I agree.
They got so many talented people that are way more famous than him. And I don't think he has anything that would set himself apart in that company. At least if TNA, it's a small company. There's an upper trajectory. He'd be middle upper card. He's not going to be the champion there. I don't think he's got like main event champion, even in TNA. I could see him being like the champion in MLW or something like that. Or carrying like different indie titles around the indie federations. But look, if he goes to New Japan, look, you're not going to be champion there. Hold on. King of the North actually had a good suggestion here. We got to text our buddy about this one. Said TNA and do some shots with Noah. I think that would be cool if he went and did some shots with Noah. That's actually a great fit. I think it is a great fit. He's probably, you know, he's 36, he's a little young for Noah. Honestly, no, I'm just kidding. No. Kaito Kiyomiya got the number one 30 under 30 from the Voices of Wrestling. So
good.
Yeah. So the biggest, youngest star happens to be there in pro wrestling. No, but look, you know, I think that if he did go to TNA, and I'll probably talk about it this weekend on Brace for Impact, I think he would probably do well there. And people just like the guy, you know.
You can't tell me that Dijak and Moose wouldn't be fun to watch, or that Dijak and Macklin wouldn't be great matches, right? Like, I think it would work really well, to be honest with you. I'd much rather see him in TNA than in MLW.
Well, yeah. Well, I would like that because I have a TNA podcast. But, I was talking to my cousin Joe, because cousin Joe is, like, huge WWE guy, right?
Oh, yeah.
And he was like, he goes, man, I can't believe WWE couldn't figure it out with Dijak. And I was just like, look, if there's something, if you're there for 7 years and you can't get over, it might not be WWE. You know, it's like, you know, there might be something going on with him. But guess who else was in WWE for 7 years and didn't get over? Macklin. And he's done a great job in TNA. That's true. He's one of my favorite parts about TNA. In fact, every time he loses, I get pissed about it. So if he comes over, you know, he better have his promo boots on or whatever. He better learn how to work some promos, and he better be ready to go, because they got some hungry guys there that are really looking to make name for themselves so they can go back to the Fed and get hired. And that's what you do when you go to TNA. You try to rebuild and rebrand.
Matt Hardy? By the way, I liked your whole thing this week about the TNA, the AEW didn't value the Hardys.
That was what Matt Hardy said. So that's why I put it on the headline. Yeah.
It's hilarious. And, yeah.
But I got some heat for that, but if you listen to what I said in the video, I said the reason why AEW didn't value the Hardys is because Jeff Hardy got a DUI in the beginning of their run. Mm-hmm. And then he came back and he got injured. Mm-hmm. The injury was not his fault. That was dipshit Guevara, but he got injured right when he got back. So of course they didn't value them. But guess what? They're both shot at this point. I think Jeff, every once in a while, can still have a good match with the right opponent. They're both shot at this point. The only people that are going to value them are TNA, because TNA is in the position to where the Hardys are valuable to them.
Matt Hardy is not a kind of guy who like takes a lot of culpability with his own like limitations and faults. He very much likes to, everybody else is against me. People like don't, people are this and that. And it doesn't, it's a theme. Very much
to his credit, I did watch his video, and he was very complimentary of AEW, and he did say that Jeff got the DUI and that derailed what we had planned there. But he said that AEW is focused on having really good matches, and I think he knows that he can't have those good matches anymore, which is why he was pushed out. He goes, I create moments. What they want is really good matches. I think they want both, and unfortunately, you can't do the great matches anymore.
Matt, are we going to really pretend that Matt Hardy didn't get a ton of shots to do lots of different stuff in AEW? He came over with his broken Matt character, and the fan base shit on it.
It didn't fit. It didn't fit. No.
So then they let him be big money Matt, then they let him be like all 10 versions of Matt Hardy. And the only one that got over is the Hardy Boys, and they self-destructed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of, it's very, like I said, very easy to do a lot of this and not realize that you have culpability too. Like, he wasn't making moments. Matt Hardy hasn't made a moment in like 20 years. I mean, okay, I'll give him the broken Hardy stuff. But I mean, like, that only could have worked in time and a place.
Yeah. I think they're, the Hardys are good for some short-term nostalgia.
I agree.
Jeff Hardy's return to TNA was awesome. Yeah. Like, that moment was fantastic. And I like them in TNA because TNA is in the position to where the Hardys are valuable.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
Like if anywhere else they go, they're not going to be that valuable, and they're not on contracts. And now that, you know, NXT and TNA are working together, I wouldn't be too crazy to see the Hardys pop up in NXT and do a shot here and there. So I happen to like the Hardys in TNA. I think that it's been mostly enjoyable. In fact, I liked Moose and Matt Hardy in the main event a couple weeks ago against Oz. They had a really fun match. And I think Matt Hardy speared Rebby Hardy through a table, and that made me laugh. So there you go. I dug the match. Well, hey guys, we were gonna do a Forbidden Door preview, but we're right at the time. I do have to cut out, so I do apologize for that. So we got 2 minutes left. So Antonio Baker says, I'd rather they're going to be a super show between TNA and WWE. Brother, I don't think that's going to happen. I think what the TNA and NXT relationship is exactly what it is right now, which I happen to be fine with. I don't think we want them to have a super show where NXT goes 9-0 on TNA and TNA's veteran stars who are established guys in the business for a long time having to put over green kids out of wrestling school. I don't think that's the way to go. I think what they're doing right now is perfectly fine. I don't think that you want to get them too close, because if they get too close, then they will kill TNA. Yep.
That's what's going to happen. Yeah. And WWE, because they're never going to do WWE TNA, because then you'd be putting TNA in the same level as WWE, which
you know what? But that makes total sense to me at this point, because you know, a lot of people shit on the AEW TNA relationship because a lot of AEW fans was like, TNA is so far beneath AEW, we didn't want these guys on our show, right? And even if, like, you know, you could say maybe Tony Khan, they was shitting on their product, that was TNA's fault. They allowed it to happen. They never got the heat back, and that sucks. But a lot of why that relationship went bad is because AEW fans were snubbing their nose at TNA. Right now, NXT and TNA, mutually beneficial relationship. TNA likes the fact that their people are getting exposure, whatever that means these days. You know, Joe Hendry had 15 million views on that YouTube video the other day. So they like the fact that their name is being said and getting all that exposure. What it leads to, who knows? And you know what? NXT is creating a little bit of buzz by having outsiders on their show, and it's made them kind of a cool thing. I think that right now it's mutually beneficial at this point. Let's keep it that way.
Don't expect any more than what you're getting is what we're saying.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, guys. That is going to do it for us this week. Stay tuned for Who Killed WCW Episode 4. JD and I will be all over that. We're going to be dropping that this weekend. And then, of course, I'll be live on Saturday morning doing Brace for Impact on patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. If you guys got TNA questions, bring them to me on Saturday, man. We'll talk about it. All right, guys. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. Amen. No way. From the track when we unite and spit, this isn't A game. Better bring your A game.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.